This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to the final episode of Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I am John.
And today we're going to be wrapping up our journey through Star Trek creators and something which we've been doing for years before Stage 9 existed over on Commentary Trek Stars and, you know, kind of wrapping up all of our time here on the network Trek.fm and, you know, reflecting on what was and, you know, remembering the good times and the bad and everything in between.
Wait, bad? There were no bad times. There were no bad times. Okay. It was all good times, Mike.
Okay.
Are you going to give me some sort of like M. Night Shyamalan revelation here where it was like, I never enjoyed this, bah, ha, 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 or something like that?
No.
All right. Just checking. It's a fair question.
I guess it is, yeah. So, you know, I mean, obviously there's a lot of, I mean, we've been doing this for so long, there's a lot of ground to cover, and it seems like just starting at the beginning and working our way forward would be a kind of an epic task, which would be almost foolish to attempt. So what we thought we would do is take the Steve Jobs approach. Have you seen Steve Jobs?
I have not.
It's awesome. Aaron Sorkin, of course, you know. So great.
I'll get to it someday.
The best Danny Boyle movie I've ever seen, easily. But the whole thing, which, you know, they did with that movie was, how do you encapsulate Steve Jobs's life in a movie, right? How do you do a biopic? You know, I mean, there's different ways that you can do biopics. You can go the Malcolm X route, you know, and start at the very beginning and go all the way through to the end and make it 3 hours long and all that stuff, which is perfectly valid and everything. But you can also kind of try to, you know, glimpse important moments and, you know, maybe try to put together a picture that way through, you know, certain elements, whether it's just, you know, like Lincoln, where it's just like one event, you know, which sort of defines him or whatever. The approach that they took with Steve Jobs, for people who don't know, is they picked three events, three launches of new products, which sort of were turning points in Steve Jobs's life and sort of signaled what it was that made him special. You know, some of them were, and one of them was a launch for something which didn't work, you know, but, you know, but it's interesting, you know, the way that they did that. And I thought that was a reason. I've always been fascinated by that movie and the way that they chose to cover someone's life and whatever. We thought, this is a long way of saying, we thought, hey, I see we could have just done the epic thing and it would have taken less time than me explaining the reference that I'm making. Whatever.
Yeah, the director's cut will be 6 hours long of this episode.
Yes. Yeah. But what we're going to do is we thought we would take just three little moments that happened which sort of signify, you know, our time together doing not just this show, but all of our work on Trek FM and why it's special to us in some way or another.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a long journey, man. It's been a long, strange trip. And it all started with a little conversation on Twitter.
Well, yeah, which is weird because like I always try to remember like how did we meet? Like it's one of those things which I always have it like, you know, for most of my like online interactions, especially with like podcasters, I'm like, "Oh, well I remember, you know, this happened and this happened and this happened." And with you, it's always a jumbled mess, and I think you finally like set me straight, but like I thought that we had met somewhere online and I didn't know how, and then I brought you into Trek FM, but that's not the case. I think you discovered the Ready Room and you participated in the Ready Room, and that's how we got to talking. And then we started talking about stuff that wasn't Star Trek related, and then it eventually became about Star Trek related stuff. So you got involved with the network. I mean, how did you hook up with the Ready Room?
Kind of lost to the mists of time, in all honesty. You know, I just know that it happened, and I don't know if this was the first time I was on the Ready Room or not, but the one that sticks in my brain is discussing If Wishes Were Horses from Deep Space Nine's first season. That's the one that stands out. I know that I was on the Ready Room other times as well. That might not be the first time, but I know that definitely, even if we were tangentially aware of each other, it was the legendary John Carpenter discussion that we had on Twitter that sort of opened the lines of communications between the two of us and accidentally brought Max in as well as like an unwilling combatant and I learned who was who tweeting from the commentary Trackstar's account. Because I, it was, I think it was Max who was like, no, I agree with you. No. Like he actually interjected. He's like, no, he's talking for himself.
Yeah, I guess it was the good old days when I didn't have my own Twitter account and I was just tweeting from @comtrackstars. And Max and I had been doing commentary Trackstars for a while. And then, we started up commentary Trekstars on Trek FM. So that must have been how it was. I saw, whatever tweet saying like John Mills is on, Trek FM. And I'm like, oh, I guess I better follow John Mills then.
Although we actually crossed paths. I think the first time we recorded together was actually we did a crossover show with Commentary Track Stars and Words with Nerds where we had our John Carpenter debate.
Yeah.
And that was where we first recorded together.
Right. Because like that was kind of like how this all came about was like I said something. I guess we were following each other on Twitter but hadn't really interacted at all. And I said something like, "John Carpenter's later movies are his best movies, and the Escape from L.A., Vampires, Ghosts of Mars Western trilogy is kind of like the pinnacle of his career." And you took offense to that.
I think I gently intimated that you were off your rocker. Still feel that way. Still feel that way. Hasn't changed in years. But
and
yes,
I so moved you, and I've since seen this happen, to other people. But I so moved you that you wrote a blog post about it.
Yes, I did. I wrote a blog post, and that was actually what prompted Max to set me straight to say, no, this is two of us. And I had to like go back and edit the blog and be like, okay, I have to draw a distinction here. This is just Mike. Max agrees with me. And I wrote the whole thing just like hammering how it was nuts to think that John Carpenter posts, I think They Live wound up becoming my demarcation line. Where like that's
which,
where the roller coaster.
Which side does it fall on?
They Live is like just past the crest of the hill as it's going downhill.
Oh my God. They Live is so great.
No. It's still up near the top of the hill. Okay. Like it's that moment where like you're hanging, like, when you're in the first car of the roller coaster and you have that and you're like building and you go over and you're like, oh, it's about to come. And then you like hang there for a second while the back cars are catching up to push you down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's about where They Live is. And then it's a very steep, quick, I'd say about 85 degree drop, rocketing downward. Through things like the mouth of Madness and those sorts of things.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I love his early movies, and the middle section of his career is where he kind of loses me. But once you get back to Escape from L.A., I'm just like, this is so great. All three of them, not counting The Ward, you know, which I don't really think counts. But yeah, I mean, not that I don't like early John Carpenter, but yeah, we decided that we should have this debate on a podcast since Max and I were doing commentary Track Stars and you and Craig were doing Words with Nerds. And we thought, okay, you know, we could both benefit from this, do an episode where we both release it, you know, in our feeds. Yeah. And that's what we did. And that was the first time that we ever, you know, did something together. And, you know, it was fun.
Yeah, it was great. It was great fun. It really was great fun. And I was thrilled when I started playing with you guys over on commentary Trek Stars, because that was great fun. Because I was the first time, did I jump on there for the first time, like talking Lindelof?
Yeah, probably Lost. I mean, or maybe it wasn't Lost. Maybe it
Cowboys
was
and Aliens.
Cowboys and Aliens.
I think it was Cowboys and Aliens. Yeah.
Because yeah, I mean, back then there were so many movies and books and everything that we were covering, which were so obscure, you know, and it sort of was like, who's got an opinion on cowboys and aliens? And, you know,
it seems like it was a different landscape back then, because I think now if you put that question out there, it would be a lot easier to find somebody willing to answer that question. You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels like there's been an explosion of commentary with regards to stuff like that.
Yeah, and we know more people now too, I guess, which is part of it. But I mean, part of it is just that everything was so obscure because we were covering everything. I mean, like trying to find people to do those Nicholas Meyer books was just insane, you know. But you know, the thing that we quickly realized is that like we can't find anyone else who wants to talk about this obscure television show. Well, let's ask John. He'll watch anything, you know. He's seen most of this stuff. You know, he had, I mean, because that was sort of like the thing that we learned was like, and this is like, a big thing, which we had to come to terms with, like there's fan podcasts and there's, you know, movie podcasts. And usually when someone wants to do a fan podcast, it's because they love that thing so much that they have a lot to say about it. But, you know, movie podcasts are much broader, and maybe you're not going to go as in-depth as you are in a fan podcast on any one thing, but it's much more scattershot in a way. Yeah. And since that's kind of what commentary Trek Stars was, you know, unlike the majority of people on the network at that time, you know, John, like you were someone who was very familiar with all this stuff, to the point that like for a while there early on, I was like, I'm pretty sure I don't know how I got this into my head. I really don't, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure he doesn't even really watch Star Trek. Like, I think, you know, like, I think we just brought him on because of the John Carpenter thing. And, but because I remember like asking, like, have you seen Deep Space Nine, you know, or something like that?
Yeah.
And
you're
like, yeah, of course I have. And I'm like, okay, I can't keep these things straight.
I was not a particularly popular child, and I lived out in the middle of nowhere. So, like, there was a lot of watching of things that occurred, you know, coming up and everything. But, I mean, like, the thing that I you know, to this day love and have always loved is the fact that, honestly, I have you to thank for even being able to appreciate certain technical aspects of anything. Like, I might have seen stuff, but I couldn't articulate anything beyond like, oh, I liked it, I didn't like it, oh, Damon Lindelof can't close out a show or something like that. But thanks to you, my wife hates watching movies with me now, because this is not a dig at her at all. Like, she has, you know, she watches a movie, she's like, yeah, I liked it. Yeah, I didn't like it. And that's about it. Everything's pretty much medium. Every so often we get something where it's like, wow, this is great. Whereas, you know, I'll be the one that's like, oh, but did you notice the lighting in that scene? And she's like, what the hell are you talking about? Well, you know, and it's like, it's, you have completely, and I honestly think that you don't give yourself enough credit, in all honesty, with exactly how much of an influence you've had on people to the point of making them obsessive compulsive about asking technical questions and those sorts of things having to do with film. And I would point back to our Hateful Eight episode where Brandon sent you questions ahead of time saying, I need to know about this and I need to know about this and I need to know about this. And it's like, you're like a technical guru and a humble one at that. But that's what has always been such a particular and unique joy about doing this show or any show with you is the fact that I know that, like, if I'm confused about something, you're an incredibly patient teacher. Like, I don't know how many times you've explained the lenses from Hateful Eight to me, but, like, you know, it'll stick one day. So
I don't know why I'm, you know, obsessed with that stuff. I think maybe because it's something which is quantifiable. You know, I mean, film criticism is so nebulous and everyone has an opinion and the opinion can change and, you know, you can be given other facts and it'll change, you know, your view of something. But, you know, an aspect ratio is constant unless you're mm-hmm. Christopher Nolan. You know, I mean, like things like that. Like it's like math and science and those things, and you can actually like talk about them in absolute terms because, you know, it's not like a create. I mean, it is a creative choice, like what you choose to use, but like that thing that you use is like a scientific thing, you know, that mm-hmm. exists. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I guess maybe that's why I like all these technical nerdy things, you know.
Well, I mean, it even, you know, I finally did get around to seeing Cloverfield Paradox, and I think you liked it more than I did at the end of the day. But being able to look at it now and recognize, you know, not just see his name, Dan Mindell, in the credits, but to look at the lighting and the shots and say, I see some signature moves here. I can tell that he worked on this because of the way this was lit or the way that this was framed and those sorts of things. So that's a fun thing, man.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we always wanted to do with, you know, especially with commentary Trek stars, because we did see that, you know, Star Trek fans, you know, I mean, we'd see it again and again and again. Like, I just finished my rewatch of Deep Space Nine onto Voyager, and then after they get through Enterprise, then they cycle right back around to the original series, and it's like people were like literally just all they were doing is watching Star Trek. And, you know, our thinking was always like, you know, if you really like these J.J. Abrams movies, you know, you might also like mm-hmm. Mission Impossible 3, because they have a lot in common and it's the same people. And, you know, I mean, it's just kind of like the thing, you know, that's something that crosses over. So that was kind of like our goal with this show, is to be like, well, why don't we just check out some of the other stuff that these people are doing, you know, expand your horizons. And we were doing that. We were expanding our own horizons in the process, because part of it was also like, I know that Nicholas Meyer has written a million books. I haven't read any of them. I basically need to force myself to read them if I'm ever going to read them. So how about we just do it as a podcast? Because if you do it as a podcast, you pretty much are obligated to, because you've said you're going to do something, and then if you don't do it, you know, it looks bad.
But yeah, I consider myself lucky to have been along for the ride, because yeah, I like the fact that we've been that PSA at the end of the after school special to learn more about visit your local library sort of thing. And the idea that you can construct like an anthropological analysis of a filmmaker or a writer or even a cinematographer and be able to look at how they work and what they do, I think it gives you a better appreciation for, you know, the art in and of itself. Like, you know, if you look at a certain music producer like Rick Rubin, right, you can sit there and you could line up his stuff and say, what is common between these things? What is the commonality here? And you'll find a thread. And I think that that's very helpful as well for, you know, like figuring out what your taste is, like knowing. You know, this is going to be a clumsy analogy, but in a lot of ways, it's almost like beer. And I don't say that just because I've given it up for Lent and I can't stop thinking about it, but because of the fact that, you know, Craig, who we mentioned earlier, I didn't really drink beer before I met him, right? Now, you could debate whether this is a good or a bad thing that now I drink more, but one of the first things he did was he said, okay, here are 10 beers. I don't think you've had the right ones. You know, you don't really like it. You don't really like to drink it, but, you know, to give you an idea of what you do like or don't like, here's a list of 10. Try them. Tell me what you think of them. And I came back and I gave him 10, and he said, okay, here are 5 more. And then he was able to like put a taste profile, and he's like, if you choose to have a beer, you're going to lean toward this. And it's held true. And I think that looking at the works of these other filmmakers, you can very much find out, do I love their work simply because it's within the Star Trek realm? Or is this a thread that I pull where the reason I like Star Trek 2 is because I like other stuff that's in this vein? Or the reason I like Star Trek 09 is because I'm predisposed toward movies that are constructed in this fashion. So I think that's, you know, I think that's a very useful thing.
Yeah, and the thing that we discovered is that there is sort of like a give and take there. Like, you look at Meyer's other stuff, and then you look at Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 6, and you're like, wow, like, Meyer is really bringing his sensibilities to Star Trek. And that's what makes it great, is seeing Meyer look at the franchise through his own personal lens. And that's, you know, it's kind of, you know, awesome to sort of like see it through that lens. Like, he's seeing it in a way better than the fans see it, because the fans are so involved in, you know, what it is that they can't see what it can be. But then, like, the flip side of that is someone like Ron Moore, who is a huge Star Trek fan, got his start working on Star Trek, spent years and years and years honing his craft on Star Trek, and then he takes that, everything he learned on Star Trek, and he applies that to, say, Battlestar Galactica, and the results are mind-blowing because he's so good at doing that Star Trek thing that when he just sort of, like, is able to take control over it in a much less formal setting where he has, you know, the power, he can blow it up and make it even bigger and better and crazier. But, like, would Battlestar Galactica be what it was if it weren't for all the time he spent working on Star Trek? Like, I don't think so. So yeah. It's kind of cool to see both sides of those things, you know.
For sure, for sure. Yeah.
So, okay. So that's how we met with the John Carpenter conversation, and, you know, it was kind of great. And, you know, obviously, it, you know, it was the type of thing where we liked what you brought to the podcast so much that we eventually, you know, just asked you to come on full time. And then
I was Jim J. Bullock in the center square.
and that worked out well, I think, for all of us. And then, you know, a few years later, like, I had this crazy idea for the 50th anniversary. And, you know, it didn't start as this we're moving on to our second
yes,
adventure
yeah.
here. This didn't start as, like, me wanting to do this epic podcast. This started as me saying, like, I want to watch every episode of Star Trek. Like, it's the 50th anniversary. You know, we've got the new series coming out. I've seen every episode of Star Trek. A lot of them I've only seen only once because they're bad. So I'm sorry, guys. They're bad.
Truth is truth.
You know? So I'm like, this would be a good way for me to sort of focus 2 episodes a day. I can watch 2 episodes a day. This is kind of great. This is kind of perfect. Let me do this. And then, like, I remember the moment. I remember exactly where I was standing. Like, I had just gotten out of the shower, and I was, like, standing in the middle of my apartment, and I'm like, I should do this as a podcast, you know? And then it became, you know, like, I'm like, let's, oh, you know? And I pitched the idea to Chris Jones, the publisher of the network, right away, and his reaction was like, that sounds like a great idea. We should totally do that, but we need to work out the logistics because no one can do it on their own. And I'm like, yeah, I guess not. So I pitched it to the network as the whole. You know, I'm like, well, what if we were to do this, guys? And there were like two people who were like, that might be cool. And there were like two or three people who were like, I don't understand what the point is. That sounds dumb, you know? And I'm like, okay. But there were enough people who were like, this might be good, might be fun. It could be fun, you know, whatever, you know, that I thought like, okay, well, maybe I should pursue this. And it was like one of those things where like I kept on like occasionally I'd bring it up, you know, and be like, so guys, what do you think? Should we do it? And there was nothing, like no reaction at all. And I was like, okay, well, we gotta, like, if we're gonna do it, we need to do it now. So should we do it? And there was still no reaction. And I'm like, boy, this is kind of disappointing because it would be fun to do. And I think I was, you know, sort of like complaining about that to you. And I was like, what if we were to just record a pilot? Just so people could see what it was. Because a lot of it was people like saying like, I don't understand what you're talking about. What would this show be, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, if we just record a pilot, maybe then people will see what we're talking about and maybe they'll be like, oh, this is cool. So even though you were like super crazy busy because you just had a kid and everything like that.
Yes.
You were like, sure, I'll watch the first three episodes of Enterprise and we can talk about them for 15 minutes each or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And we did it. And we had, like, basically without telling anyone, because the project, I think, in most people's minds was dead. But we just did it on our own. We recorded it. We edited it. And then we just posted it up on our planning site and said, what do you guys think? And that's when everyone, like, listened to it and was like, oh, yeah, this is cool. This would be fun. And then everyone was like, let's do it, you know?
And that, hijinks ensue.
Yeah. And that became, you know, like, I mean, people really responded to that show. You know, I mean, people really loved it. It was just like like this big, massive thing and this massive undertaking, which really defined my 2016. You know, it just sort of became like a daily thing. And, you know, it was all because, you know, the two of us just were like, what if we do this? And there was even like a thing where like right before we started, I was like, if I don't upload this file, no one will say anything. No one will ever know about this and no one will care. But if I do upload this file, I'm basically going to be doing this nonstop for the next year. And then I uploaded the file because, you know, I'm not very smart, I guess.
You know, from there to here was, okay, first and foremost, it was a great idea. Everybody enjoyed it. I enjoyed listening to it. Everybody dug it. Number two, it still blows my mind that like some official Paramount or CBS or whatever outlet didn't do that.
Yeah.
Didn't, like, we did what the big dogs wouldn't do. And that is pretty awesome because that's, you know, that's where like the innovative stuff happens. That's the space where it happens. And somebody's like, why isn't somebody doing this? Let's do it. And the sheer monumental amount of effort that you put into it may be a quiet moment in history that won't get written about anywhere. But there are those of us that will always know, Mike, that will know what you put into that. And yes, that is not to take away from anybody else. People did art, people did recordings, people uploaded their stuff and all of those sorts of things. But there was the spreadsheet. Could you please upload your audio? And you know what? Before anybody thinks I'm like throwing that at anybody else, I was the worst person whenever I participated. Mike still, to this day, has to send me reminders saying, can I get the audio or the art or something like that? I was like, oh, right. Yeah, sorry about that.
Now you I'm need the to do worst the same about thing that. For me. I'm never uploading that audio for Great Shot Kid ever, but it's like
it's just out of sight, out of mind, you know? It just happens. But, yeah, I mean, from there to here, honestly, was the best celebration of Trek that year. like I can't think of anything else that was done that year in any outlet where it's like, for, you know, how did you celebrate the 50th anniversary of Star Trek? My mind goes to From There to Here. Of course. How else would I have done it?
And that, you know, and it was definitely like a lot of fun, and there were, you know, tons and tons of people who worked on it and contributed, for sure. You know, I'm not by any means trying to take all the credit for this show. You know, I mean, it was just a grind. It was a definitely a daily thing where it was like, you know, I've got to do this stuff, you know, but it was worth it, I think, because of the people. You know, people who listened to it, their reaction to it, and their interaction and everything. And, you know, the fact that people were enjoying it. And I really love the fact that, you know, we got to have, you know, so many different voices on that show, and you never really knew what people were going to say, you know? I mean, there was, I think because it is a fan podcast, again, you know, there was like a lot of stuff early on where like we're watching Enterprise and there would be people, myself included, who'd be like, this episode is not good, you know, and and like I got more than a few you know, letters or tweets or whatever saying like, are you planning on celebrating Star Trek in this 50th anniversary celebration, or are you just gonna crap all over it for the next year? And it's like, look, we're playing the long game, you know? It's right. You know, 162-game season. You're going to lose at least 60 games, but even if you do that, you're still going to make it to the playoffs. That's how I always thought of Star Trek, like 729 episodes. Like, if 200 of those are good, that's a massive achievement, you know?
It really kind of is, if you think about it. It really kind of is, especially considering there are like entire seasons of some of the shows that you just hit, that's 24 episodes right out the window.
Exactly. It's just,
you know, maybe 22 out of the 24 like are out the window, and you got two left.
Right.
Like the conspiracy.
The idea was like, when we got to the end of it, we could look at this entire body of work and be like, this is amazing. You know, this is the best television franchise ever, you know, but you're going to have your alternative factors and your thresholds.
Now you hold up right there, because Brandon and I did Alternative Factor. Right. And yeah, we came out swinging the fences for that one. And we found that there was more love for that episode than anybody ever thought.
And see, that's cool, because like, I look at Alternative Factor, and I just watched that episode like a couple of weeks ago. I look at that and I'm like, boy, it's a tough sit. This is a real tough sit. You know, but like, I want to hear the opinion of someone who loves it, because it's going to be weird and it's going to be something that I haven't thought of before. Just like, you know, I mean, there were times where people would respond and they'd be like, I was really looking forward to you guys talking about, you know, Best of Both Worlds, and then to hear that you didn't like it, it really bummed me out. And, you know, to me, like, if someone were to like, you know, come out and be like, Star Trek 2 is the biggest piece of garbage I've ever seen in my life, like, I want to hear what that guy has to say, because it's going to be crazy and weird and interesting and definitely something that I haven't thought of before, you know? I don't really want to hear a podcast where someone's like, this is what I think about Star Trek 09, and I'm like, I think the exact same thing, because I've already thought of that. I want to hear someone say, yes, like, this is what I think about Star Trek 9, and I go, I never thought of that before. That changes the way I view it.
I was raised with the belief, and I adhere to it, that if you truly think something, if you truly love something, then it's, you can withstand hearing honest criticism of it.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing that can possibly happen is that you'll be forced to think and apply that thought and say, does it still stand up? And yeah, if you really love it, you'll walk out and you'll be like, no, I really, I mean, speaking as a prequels fan, you know, I'm used to, you know, people throw stuff. No, yeah, you know, and I can break it down and, you know, and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, you just, it's cool to disagree. Although one thing I will always disagree with the animated series on is they pronounced Ambergris Ambergris. And I remember that was a point of contention that I had. Because I go back to the Futurama episode where they specifically highlight how it's pronounced. So Ambergris is not correct.
Okay. So, all right.
There you go. That was my big takeaway from there to here.
That works. But it is true. Like, you know, Like, I've heard, obviously, so many people talk about how much they hate Star Trek Into Darkness. And I hear the criticism, and I'm like, I see what you're saying, but that to me is not important, or that doesn't hold up, or, you know, there's all this other stuff here which is so much more important to the movie, and that's why I love it. Where, you know, I've also heard, you know, criticisms of Star Trek III, for example, where I'm like, huh, I never thought about it in that way at all. And now you've kind of ruined that movie for me, you know, because like I sit there and I watch it, I'm like, this is great. And then, you know, someone comes in and says, well, but it kind of ruined Star Trek II. And then I'm like, that's accurate. That's accurate.
That's a pretty fair comment.
Now I don't like Star Trek III anymore. Oh, well, you know.
Well, I like Krug.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, I still watch it and be like, oh, this is so exciting. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, it's too bad it's not a good movie anymore, you know? But then, like, when I, like, I mean, you know, I don't know. It's a complicated thing.
But our love for these things always is complicated. And I think that, you know, it's also, I've pointed to James Bond recently, but I think Star Trek is another franchise where you can sort of see how if you encounter an entry in the series that isn't your favorite or isn't particularly good, it doesn't mean you're going to stop watching it. It means that you're going to say, you're going to compartmentalize it. You're going to say, you know what? I really loved Skyfall, but Quantum of Solace was not a good movie, and that's okay. And I will move on, you know, to a different film, or I'll look through and I'll say, you know, I mean, Star Trek V gets curb stomped all the time, and nobody stopped being a Star Trek fan after Star Trek V came out. So, you know,
and the other side of that, the other thing about that is, it's like, you know, there's a lot of times where people will say, like, if you don't like this thing so much, like if you dislike this thing so much, why would you even want to talk about it? And it's like, it's because of that long game, because of that, you know, overall thing. And it's like, because you're disappointed by it, because you've seen The Wrath of Khan and you know mm-hmm. how good Star Trek can be. And when it's not that good, it's disappointing. And because you've put so much effort into this thing in your life, you know, whether it's, you know, just the anticipation of this movie being released, or whether it's, you know, collecting all the whatevers, or whether it's because you see the philosophies of Star Trek as sort of like your guideposts for morality or whatever, that when you see something which goes against that, you're disappointed because it's almost like a betrayal of your life or whatever, and in some ways, and you want to talk about it because it's important to you. It's not just something where, you know, like, you know, I can look at XXX and say that's a bad movie, and then I can look at XXX2 and say, well, that's an okay movie, and then I can look at XXX3 and say that movie was great. You know, and you know, when people say like, oh, but you hate XXX1, I can be like, yeah, it's not, you know, and I don't have anything to say about it. But, you know, when someone's like, oh, but Star Trek Insurrection, I would be like, let me tell you why this movie is garbage, you know, and then, you know, because it's important to me. It's important that it's garbage, where, you know, with XXX1, it has no bearing on my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, I don't know.
You know, do you think that is why we find ourselves in the position of stuff like the Marvel franchise, where they found the spot that people like, and they know the parameters through which to navigate it? But the nature of the Star Trek franchise in the past, at least with the movie series, was everybody was coming in swinging for the fences, and every so often you got a miss. But in exchange for that screw up along the way, you got your Star Trek II, you got your Star Trek IV, you got your Star Trek VI, or whatever one you want to insert into that that you particularly love. And so by Star Trek being hit and miss with its film series and its, you know, and its TV series, isn't that just the price of occasionally getting the greatness? You know?
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely say that with the original series, right? I mean, the original series is a power hitter who's going to hit 50 home runs over the course of a season, but mm-hmm. he's also going to strike out, you know, more than anyone else, whereas, you know, the Marvel franchise or Next Generation or whatever, someone who's going to hit for average, you know, super, super consistent, always going to be good, but never going to be great, you know, mm-hmm. always going to get on base, but never going to hit a grand slam. I mean, you know, and you could make the argument as to which is better, you know.
Well, some fans are happier with, you know, consistently going to the playoffs, and some fans are content to win the World Series and then have, you know, five rebuilding years before they see the playoffs again.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you got to take what comes, you know, and you don't really have much say in it. But that doesn't mean you're not going to have a reaction to it. That doesn't mean that you're not going to have something to say about those rebuilding years. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the whole point of bringing up, you know, From There to Here is just the idea that it's nothing to do with any of this stuff that we're talking about, really. It's just the idea that, like, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, I think amazing to us in a lot of ways that, like, we are just two guys sitting around talking about something that we like, and yet that conversation can become, you know, something which is kind of like part of a communal discussion, you know, where it's not even just all of the people on the network who are, you know, talking about Star Trek for, you know, 15 minutes a day, every single day for a year, but also all the people online who are reacting to our discussion and everything like that. And I don't know. It's one of those things where I think about it and it just makes me happy that, you know, if it started off with just, you know, the two of us being like, what if we just, you know, try it and see what happens?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a pretty cool thing that happened, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Okay. So let's move on to our third element. Okay. Which is something which is not really at all podcast related, but that's kind of the point. It was earlier this year.
Yeah.
Right?
No. What? No, it was
last 2017. Year.
2017. Yeah.
Okay.
2017.
2017. That was like September or something like that.
October.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. See, I don't know.
September, October. It's roughly the same.
It's all just a blur to me.
No, but the only reason I remember it is because of what we did at that time. What we were able to do.
Right. Right. I drove with Max down to Orlando from Chicago because he was moving there and, you know, I needed to help him drive his cats. And my wife and I decided to stay at Disney World because that's what we always do. And
it's what Orlando is for.
Exactly. Exactly. But one of the other cool things about Orlando is that you're down there.
I am.
So we got to meet up and go get dinner at the happiest place on earth and go see a movie.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah. Seriously, that's like a bucket list item, y'all, is that I got to see a movie in person with Mike Schindler. Like that was, I was like, yes, it happened. It finally happened.
No, I mean, same thing with you. I mean, I think it's pretty cool that because like they had it was like just they just had Force Friday 2 or whatever, Force Friday 3, if I'm going to or well. I like to call it Last Friday because the first one was Force Friday and the second one was Rogue Friday. So this is Last Friday. So it was just after Last Friday. It was just Last Friday that you know, we were in Disney World and we got to, you know, walk around to all of the gift shops and look at all of the Star Wars merchandise. I mean, to go like Star Wars toy shopping with John Mills.
The Wall of Porgs. The Wall of Porgs. I remember those. I still have to get my Porg skull to drink coffee out of. but But see, that's the problem with those mugs is like the full pour. I got to saw the thing in half and then like put the bottom back on it. So it's just its head. Going around, walking around Disney, and then going to see Close Encounters of the Third Kind in its re-release.
Yeah.
And for me, one of the highlights of it, besides, you know, sitting there watching it on the big screen and saying, oh, hey, look, there's the Klingon D7 right there, but they painted it wrong, but that's cool. Mm-hmm. And then walking out, both Mike and I, this classic of American cinema that Denis Villeneuve has cited as terribly influential, and J.J. Abrams says it changed everything he saw possible about filmmaking, and Mike and I walk out, and we're like, yeah, it's all right. You know, like,
it was. What do you want us to say, you know? I mean, if we went to see something like, you know, Lost World, Jurassic Park, or Minority Report, or whatever, I'd be like, this is one of the best movies ever made. But we went to see Close Encounters. It's Lester Spielberg. What do you want me to do about it? I didn't make the movie.
Yeah, it's definitely a product of its time. But again, you know, getting back to what we were just talking about, that's the beautiful thing of it is like we're both able to just walk out and just, you know, lay an honest opinion about it and just like, you know, hey, you know, and if people love it and they think it's fantastic, good for them. That's awesome. Cool. Yeah.
And also you introduced me to Red Vines.
Ah, yes.
My go-to candy when I watch a movie is Twizzlers. And you were like, oh, they got Red Vines. And, you know, I tried them. And, I mean, you know, my wife will attest that now, you know, usually if I'm going to a theater that has Red Vines, I'll be like, let me get these. They're like Twizzlers, only better.
Yes. Yes. Victory. Victory.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And you know, I mean, then that kind of like speaks to this whole thing is it's like, yeah, we started off because we were disagreeing. Hey, by the way, you know, we were disagreeing about John Carpenter and, you know, that disagreement, you know, talking to someone about, you know, why they're wrong about a movie led to, you know, a friendship, which led to a podcast, which was listened to by a bunch of people. And it also led to, you know, two people meeting, watching another movie that they didn't like.
Yeah.
Pretty special, you know?
Next time it's going to be a movie that we do like.
Yeah. See, we should have gone to the T2 3D.
We really kind of should have. My 3D bias really worked against me on that one. I really should have just bitten the bullet. I should have just been happy just to see T2 on screen again because that, I mean, that's one of the best movies.
It is. One of the best really movies is. Ever. For sure.
Although it's a theatrical cut, right? It's not the...
It is the theatrical special. Cut.
Kind of prefer the special edition. Not the ultimate edition, but the special edition. The one they released on video back in 92.
Yeah. The special edition is okay, but it's not. It's the theatrical cut.
I like the special edition more because it fleshes out everything that's going wrong with the T-1000 in the steel mill.
That's true. I mean, you know, there's a few extra points there, but... You know, I think a lot of it is, I mean, I don't dislike the special edition. You know, I just think that the theatrical is a bit tighter and a bit, you know.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. I wish that they could, like, meet in the middle and just have the extended stuff inside the steel mill. And then, because I really do think it's a big deal that shot of seeing fake Sarah Connor's feet melded with the iron grating.
Yeah.
Is it's a cool shot, and it's also like, oh, that's how he suddenly notices that it's, you know, the wrong one.
Well, hey, I mean, you know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind is a in-between cut, you know, the one that we watched. So maybe one day James Cameron will do an in-between cut.
Just hey, there are six cuts of Blade Runner out there. Why not six cuts of T2?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, well.
Yeah, well.
All right. So that's it. That's the story of us. That's the story of this podcast. You know?
Yeah. It is. I feel like, have you seen that show This Is Us?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
I
good. No. My wife watches it and I catch 5 minutes here or there and I've been kicked out of the room for saying, "Is anybody ever happy on this show?" But yeah, no, the story of, I just think of This Is Us and like, you know, it's cue the slowly twanging guitar as we're saying our farewell to stage 9.
Yeah. Did you ever see The Story of Us? The Rob Reiner movie with Michelle Pfeiffer and Bruce Willis? where they're like going through a divorce.
No, I didn't see that. Is it good?
No, it's terrible. It's a terrible, terrible movie.
All right.
But,
all right.
You know, maybe that's a metaphor for stage 9, too. I don't know. But anyway, it's been fun for sure. You know, I mean, I mean, that's the thing is it's like, you know, we do this podcast. We've been doing it for, you know, years now in one incarnation or another. And, you know, it's really gotten to the point where it's like, well, you know, this is a lot of work. And, you know, there's sort of, you know, the law of diminishing returns. We've been talking about Star Trek for so long that maybe, you know, it's time to shift the conversation to something else. But, you know, the one of the things which has always sort of been in the back of my head where I'm like, but is, you know, the fact that I enjoy talking to you every Monday night, you know?
So
I mean, that's the thing that, you know, I mean, editing and publishing and all that stuff is kind of a chore. But, you know, the thing that makes me keep on coming back and doing it again and again and again is the fact that, you know, we get to do what we're doing at this very moment, you know, just chatting about movies. So,
yeah, man, you know, it is a singular pleasure. There are a couple of people that, you know, every so often the last week, hey, so what are you doing on Monday? I'm like, come on, man, that's Mike's day.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, that's you. You know, that's Mike's day. Don't bother me on that day. So,
yeah, it's a good way to start the week.
I agree. Yeah.
All right. Well, before we go, we have some people who we would like to thank for making this show possible.
Yes.
Because we definitely could not do it alone. First off, our associate producers, Norman C. Lau, Jeff Sutter, and Chris Steftenagel. They've been with us since the beginning, you know, back before we were, you know, anything more than, you know, an idea or maybe just one single episode of a show. And the fact that people like us that much to, you know, kind of like support us, you know, and chat with us, you know, online and do all that stuff, it's very, very humbling and
it's
nice.
Really cool. It's very much appreciated. Thank you for the support very much.
Yes, for sure, for sure. We also need to thank our executive producers, Ken Tripp and Matthew Rushing. Of course, is your co-host over there on the Parsec Award-winning aggressive negotiations. And Matt has definitely bailed us out on occasion when, you know, I might have messed something up in the publishing or, you know, that kind of thing. And Ken has always been extremely supportive as well, you know, sending us little notes talking about how he actually listens to the show. That is very, very kind and very much appreciated.
Yeah.
We need to thank all of the people who have come on as guests on this show. You know, there have been a lot of them. Charlene Schmidt, who was on the very first episode to talk to us about Kirsten Beyer. David Mack, who was talking about his short stories, which was, you know, really, really fun. Larry Nemechek, Lee Hutchison, Adam Drozen, Justin Ozer, Sarah Buck, Dave Rossi, Zach Moore, Marcelo Pico, Robert Hewitt Wolf. I mean, that's amazing. You know, that's like, you know, bucket list for me.
Yep.
a lot of fun. And also just, you know, kind of personally, you know, since, I mean, you know, I've been on Trek FM forever and have done a number of shows aside from this one, I just want to thank the various people who have co-hosted, you know, with me. Max Hagel, of course, you know, starting with Commentary Trek Stars. Drew Stewart, who, you know, I wouldn't even be on the network if it weren't for his support early on. And he also did some very, very cool alternative art for Stage 9, which, you know, I have like hanging up on my wall and everything. It's so great. Aaron Harvey, who started on the Edge with us and who also did the show art that we used for Stage 9. Brandon Shea Matala from the Edge, who also guested on this show and has always been very, very supportive, you know, not only in terms of like listening and giving us feedback and, you know, commenting on our shows, but also in terms of, you know, volunteering to help pick up the slack on some behind the scenes stuff when needed. You know, we really, really appreciate everything that he's done for us. Amy Nelson, who also does The Edge, and Brandy Jacola and Bruce Gibson, who do Live from the Edge, which was, you know, that was like one of those things where I was like, let's do a live show. And then I'm like, but I don't want to do it myself. And, you know, they're much better suited to that format. And I love the fact that, you know, they were able to implement, you know, one of those crazy ideas that we had. And then, of course, Christopher Jones, the publisher, yeah, and, you know, executive producer, and all of the rest of it, who, you know, allows us to do all this stuff, and who's really taught both of us a whole bunch about podcasting stuff.
Oh,
that
my
we
yes.
use.
Oh, I mean, my yes. A whole lot.
It's kind of weird how like his common sense podcasting knowledge has sort of just like, you know, just the idea of doing things like recording locally and stuff like that, you know, and having mm-hmm. that, like, you know, hammered into my head, like completely changed the way that, you know, I produced podcasts. And then, you know, the way that kind of like spread out to other people, where, you know, like I'll be talking to, you know, other podcasters and say like, well, you know, this is what I do. And then they start it up and are like, hey, mm-hmm. this is the way to go, you know. And his influence is far reaching, you know, to people who don't even know who he is. And yeah, you know, that's pretty impressive. And
yeah, I want to double underline that I really think that Chris has everything to do with anything that I've ever done properly in terms of like recording procedures and stuff like that, because he does adhere to, you know, these principles that guide. And of course, without his initial invitation, I never would have become a part of the Trek FM family. And I know that I'm not a terribly vocal part, you know, on the Babel conference or anything like that, but there are times where I've been so incredibly deeply grateful to have been a part of this community, where it has meant more to me than maybe sometimes I've shown. And, I just, for all of the names that Mike listed, for any names that we might forget, for any body who has listened or who has touched on the show or anything like that, all that can be expressed is just a deep, abiding gratefulness for your time, your support, your love, your friendship, all of those things that go along with being a part of this community. And it's just a very deep thank you. It's meant a lot more than sometimes people can realize.
That's definitely true. I mean, you know, there's times where you're podcasting and, you know, you're having these conversations every week and you're throwing them out there and there might be no reaction. You know, you can see that people are listening because you see, you know, there are downloads or whatever, but like people have literally nothing to say about what you're saying. And, you know, then someone will be like, hey, you know, I listened to the show and here's what I think. And just the idea that someone is listening, you know, and someone is taking the time to you know, give us feedback or whatever, it really just sort of like it keeps us going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, you know, why it's hard to stop in a lot of ways, you know, and
yeah.
It's definitely appreciated, you know, a lot. And you're right. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I wanted to come to Trek FM in the first place, was because I saw the community. Like, I saw the interaction that people were having, not just with Trek FM, but with like Star Trek podcasts in general. That was something which always blew my mind, was the way that people interact with Star Trek podcasters. And I wanted to kind of, you know, latch on to that, because I wanted to have like a larger conversation. I wanted to be part of a larger community. And, you know, now I am. So, you know, that's really cool, and I really appreciate that, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's pretty much it. I don't know. I never know, you know, what else to say at the end of these things.
It's always tough to be the last one off the stage and to put out that ghost light and stroll on out. But yeah, it's been a really good time. Been a really good time. We're not dying though. We're not dying. You'll still see us out there from time to time.
Yeah, but we'll still be doing our thing, and if you look hard enough, you'll be able to find us, you know. But yeah, thanks everyone for listening, and thanks to everyone at Trek FM for supporting us and allowing us to do this for all these years, and you know, thanks for everything that you taught us, and yeah, we'll talk to you again sometime in the future.
Second star to the right, and straight on till morning.